Okay, I want to discuss a mitzvah that appears in this week's Sedra. And in the end, you'll see that it has a tremendous connection also to Elul and preparing for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, even though on the surface, we're going to see it doesn't seem to have too much of a connection. The Torah says the following. Ki shikra v'l'ir lihilochim oleva. When you'll make a siege around the city for many days to fight it and letovsa in order to conquer the city, don't destroy the trees. Garzen, to cut them down with an axe, because you should eat from those trees. You should not cut down the fruit trees. Are the trees then human beings that are threatening you in your siege? Only a tree that you know not to be a fruit tree, also sashris the korata, that kind of tree you can cut down, and that you can use to build your siege. Okay. So from this pasuk we learn that it is usur to cut down fruit trees. And we also learn that it's usur to destroy anything wantonly. Okay? Anything that man has benefit from. To, even if it's not his, even belongs to no one. It's hefker. It's ownerless. You're not allowed to wantonly destroy anything in this world. Some say that the only prohibition that's from the Torah is actually destroying fruit trees. Anything else is only rabbinic. And others say that all of it, and most opinions hold, that destroying anything in this world wantonly is a Torah prohibition. Okay. Now, the truth is, therefore, that you can't destroy wantonly even trees that don't bear fruit. What the Torah is saying is the following. If you have a need to cut down trees in order to build a siege or to protect yourself against the enemy, then of course you're allowed to cut down even fruit trees. However, if you have a choice and you have available to you fruit trees and non-fruit trees, then cut down the non-fruit tree before you cut down the fruit trees. Okay. If, however, you don't really have a need to cut down these trees for the siege, or you have no need to cut them down because the enemy's hiding amongst them and they present a danger to you, then you're allowed to. Here we have in modern days. Right, Arabs hide behind olive trees and shoot at Jews who go on the road. You're allowed to cut down those olive trees in order to protect yourself, that's for sure. No shaila about that. However, what about destroying the trees in order to make the enemy feel bad? In other words, a scorched earth policy. Okay, you're not going to capture the city, but you don't want the enemy to benefit from them. That's a Shaila, it's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam seems to say that just to wantonly destroy the trees, to hurt the enemy, but not to protect yourself, not to be able to capture the city, is prohibited. And the Ramban says even that's considered a legitimate need, right, to want these enemies to not have the benefit of their trees. That's also a legitimate need. That's an argument. In any case, basically, the rule, therefore, is wherever there is a need, you're not wantonly destroying something. You're destroying something because you need it to be destroyed. Right, for instance, to walk in the street and to step on ants wantonly just to kill ants and they're not bothering you, right, that probably is prohibited. But if the ants are in your kitchen, right, and you want to spray them because you don't like ants attacking your food or just not comfortable for you, right, to have cockroaches running around your house, then you're allowed to do that. But if it's outside and you can avoid the cockroach and it's not in your territory, stomp the step on a cockroach outside is no purpose to that. But if it's not a cockroach, it's something that's dangerous and you want to kill it that shouldn't harm somebody else, that during the week for sure is okay. Or even if you won't have a loss, it's not bothering you, but you'll have a profit. You want to cut down the tree because you want to use the wood to build something. Right? For sure, you're allowed to cut down trees if you need the wood. Okay? However, there also, you can't cut down a fruit tree if you have trees that are not what are called fruit trees that are available for the wood. Okay. Or you need it for a mitzvah. You want to cut down schach. You want to cut a tree down for schach or to build your sukkah. Okay. Even a hiddur mitzvah. But here again, you have to take preference to the non-fruit trees over a fruit tree. Now, the rabbis tell us that in addition to the prohibition of cutting down fruit trees, there's another aspect of cutting down fruit trees, and that is it's dangerous to cut down a fruit tree spiritually. Okay? There is the Gemara says that one of the Amoraim said, my son died because he cut down a fig tree improperly. And it was serious enough of an offense that it caused his death, his premature death. The Tirkei Rav Lezer says that when you cut down a fruit tree, its voice goes from one end of the world to another. Right? It screams. The malach, every tree has an angel. The angel screams when you cut down a fruit tree. Now, some say that that's even non-fruit trees. Right? It says, now there's some other thing it says. If you cut down a tree, a fruit tree, you'll never see a siman bracha from what you cut it down. And some say that even by any tree, cutting down trees doesn't bring a person a siman bracha. One second. However, most opinions say that that's only where you cut it down in a prohibited way. All of these things, the danger, the fact that you won't see a bracha from it, is all where you did it prohibited. So in addition to the prohibition, there's also this danger and this, what's it called, idea that you won't see a siman bracha. But where you're allowed to cut it down, for instance, like we said, where you need it, where it's causing you damage or whatever, any case where you're allowed to do it, then there's no danger either. That's what most opinions hold. There are a minority of opinions that hold that even where you're allowed to cut it down, there's still a danger. Halachically, you're allowed, but you should know there's going to be a danger. Therefore, what we normally do with fruit trees is even where it's permissible to cut it down, for instance, you have a fruit tree growing, and it's bringing bees to your house or whatever, and it's causing you tremendous tsar. Or you have a fruit tree that costs more to maintain than it produces. Or you need the place, you want to extend your house, and the fruit tree's right in the middle there. And you need the house not just for luxury, but to have living space. So in all those cases, it would be permitted to cut down the tree. Okay? And you can't say, well, go through and cut down another tree. It doesn't bear fruit. This is the tree that's causing me the problems. Okay? It's not another tree. So you have to cut down this tree. According to almost all opinions, it's okay to cut down that fruit tree. In that situation, some opinions say there's still a danger. Therefore, what one should do is hire a non-Jew and even give him the tree, right, and tell him he should cut it down. And it could be that there's no danger to non-Jews. It's only a danger to a Jew because he has these halachas. And in addition, it's also preferable if you can transplant the tree somewhere else, you sell it or give it to the goy and let him uproot it and tell him you would like him to transplant it somewhere, let him take it home and transplant it, that's ideal. But even if you can't transplant it, it's better to have it cut down by a goy, but most opinions hold that if you're allowed to cut it down, then there's no danger and you can cut it down yourself too. But to be extra careful, what usually is done is we try to get a goy to do it. Yeah. I hear. Okay. Because they didn't want to take even a chance of that danger. I hear. Diseased? If they're causing other trees to get diseased or whatever. What? And again, if it doesn't produce fruit, okay, it's a fruit tree that doesn't produce enough fruit to make it worthwhile to take care of the tree, then what's better is not to destroy it openly, but to not water it or whatever, let it die, and then when it's dead, you can take it out, or have a non-Jew take it down. Yeah. Yes. In Eretz Israel, there's a mitzvah to plant fruit trees specifically. Okay, and in some places, a mitzvah, when the Beis HaMikdash was around, in Eretz Israel, everybody was in their proper place or whatever, there's a mitzvah to have a migrash around a city, to make it look nice, with nice a place where there was a forest around the city or whatever, to make it look nice. Okay, next. What happens, like we said, if you don't need the tree, but you need the space that the tree takes up, then, what's it called, there are those that say that it's mutter, and some say that it's aser. La halacha, here again, it's better to do by a goy. And also, I think Rav Avadya Yosef says that if it's just for luxury, right, you know, if you want to build a patio that you don't really need, and it means cutting down a fruit tree, better not to do it. But if you need an extra bedroom, and you're very, very crowded, if you don't build that bedroom, and you need to cut down the tree to build a bedroom, then you can do it. And here again, better to do it through a goy. There's a question whether destroying part of a tree, cutting off branches, okay, is that also part of this prohibition, only cutting down the entire tree? Some hold that it's only where you destroy the whole thing, but not part, and some hold that even if you make the thing worthless, that's also called wanton destruction. Another kind of, wanton destruction is bodily destruction. Okay, body piercing. There's no purpose to it. Stop to mutilate your body is prohibited. Okay, on the other hand, if you're doing it for a purpose, you want to wear earrings or whatever, that would be okay. And in a place where it's customary to wear nose rings or any other kind of things like that, that also wouldn't be considered mutilation. But it's found to mutilate your body is osser, okay? If it's not in mutilation, plastic surgery, right? So you want to, wound your body, but for a purpose. So Moshe Feinstein holds, since you're not doing it as wanton destruction, that's permissible. Others hold that if there's a need, in other words, you would be bizarre. You need the plastic surgery because you can't find a shidduch otherwise, or it would causes you tremendous embarrassment the way you look, then you're allowed. If it's just, you know, you're not really embarrassed the way you look, you're 90 years old, you want to look 13, right? That's not a terrible embarrassment to be 90, right? That kind of plastic surgery, some people say, is not allowed. But Moshe Feinstein holds it, even that's allowed. What? A facelift, right? Depends. If you, let's say you need a facelift because of your parnasa, you'd lose your job if you didn't get a facelift or whatever. Your parnasa has something to do with your face, okay? Then that for sure would be okay. But if it's not something that's very embarrassing, it's not going to something to cause you a loss of money, you just want to look a little bit nicer and you could live with it without that, then it could be you're not allowed to do that. Again, Moshe Feinstein holds even then you're allowed to do it. Okay, another kind of destruction. Feeding food that's fit for human consumption to animals is considered destroying it because you are bringing it down a level you could be used for human beings and you're taking and using it for animals. However, if there's nothing else to feed the animal, then you're allowed to feed him things that are fit for human consumption. Or if the food is no longer fit for human consumption, because people won't eat it. Stale bread or whatever you're allowed to feed to the birds or whatever, because people aren't going to eat it. Okay, scraps that are left over on people's plates, nobody's going to eat that. Okay, so you can throw it into the garbage. You can feed it to an animal also. Another thing is destroying your body. Okay, it takes precedence over destroying food. For instance. It says what the Romans used to do, and I apologize if you haven't eaten lunch yet. The Romans, in order that they should be able to eat more and more, used to have vomitoriums. They used to make themselves vomit so they could eat more. That's wasting the food, the original food. On the other hand, if a person's sick and he has to make himself vomit to feel better, then it's better to waste the food than to waste your body. Being sick is wasting your body. So food, wasting food is not as serious as wasting your body, the Gemara says. Anything that's of minimal importance, of value, you are allowed to destroy, because it's not considered destruction. For instance, throwing away bread is not proper if it's a kazayas. But if it's less than a kazayas, just crumbs, then you're allowed to throw it away. But it says that it's still not good. It's kosher lanias. It's not good when it comes to, it's a school that you get poor. Okay, you don't need those kind of schools. Okay. Also, to stop waste wine, right, pour wine out, right, havdalah, right, without any reason, you're not allowed to do. what we do is we fill the cup a little extra, so a little bit spills over to have that simen bracha. But stam to waste the wine, even for a mitzvah, but it's not necessary, would be not be permitted. Or to make anything use up faster or in a way that's not necessary. For instance, you have a candle that's burning, and you expose it to a wind where it'll burn faster for no reason. You're wasting that candle. That's also considered wanton destruction, malkashris. What? I mean, again, if by finishing it you're going to get sick, or you don't want to, it's going to make you disgusted, then your being disgusted is more important than finishing that coast. Right? You know, your mother says, eat what's on your plate, finish everything, but you're going to get sick from doing that, then you can throw it in the garbage. Okay, you can leave it over. On the other hand, if you're still leaving it, right, in a wanton way, then throwing food in the garbage is something that could be salvaged, right, or something you could eat, and you just decide, I'm not going to eat it, not because you're sick or whatever, you're just too busy or whatever. But again, wasting time is also about kashrus, so if you need the time, that's also okay. What? What it says, if it's not edible at all, okay, it's so stale that it can't be eaten, then you can wrap it up and throw it away. Yeah. It doubles, even one is enough. Yeah. Okay, now I want to go to some of the hashkafa ideas of Balkashkas. We covered some of the halachas. Let's see some of the hashkafa. The Sefer HaChinuch writes the following, I'll quote you word for word what he says. Shorish HaMitzvah, Kedei Lelamed Nafshenu Le'ehov HaTov. The root of this mitzvah of not destroying things is to inculcate in our nefesh to love good, the hatoelus, and that which is beneficial, ulehi gavikbo, and to cleave to things that are good and beneficial. Umitocha tigbak bano hatova, the narchik mikol davar hashchasa, and that way we the good will cleave to us. Mida keneged mida. If you go after beneficial and good things, then beneficial and good things will follow you. We see the opposite of that by David HaMelech. David HaMelech destroyed the clothing of Shaul. He cut the corner of his clothing, and later on, David's clothing didn't give him warmth. He was punished because he was mezalzel in clothing. He didn't treat them with respect. He destroyed them. They didn't give him the benefit. So we see that the more you cleave to good things and beneficial things and respect them, right, then those things will benefit you. V'zehu derech ha-chasidim ha-shemaisa. This is the way that pious people conduct themselves. Ohadim ha-shalom. They love things that are good in the world. They love peace. U'smeichin v'tov ha-brius. And they're happy when people receive good. U'mekarvin osam la-Torah. They bring them closer to Torah because they know the Torah is good. So they want other people to benefit from that good. And good people don't even destroy a mustard seed. Because if it's good, then let people benefit from it. Why should it be destroyed? It bothers them if things are destroyed or lost. Anything they see of destruction or loss, it bothers them. And anything they can save from being destroyed, they run out of their way to save it. B'chol kocham, with all their power. Lo chein harishoyim. This is not the way with wicked people. By wicked people, acheim shom azikim, they are the relatives of damage. They're damagers themselves. Snechim harishoyim, they love to see the world destroyed. That's evil. Evil likes to see destruction. Okay? Behem hashchisim, and they destroy themselves. So they're constantly involved, an evil person's involved in destroying himself, destroying the world, and therefore he's interested in destruction. And therefore, b'derech sha'adam mida sha'adam modeh modim lo, the way a person measures is the way he's measured. Kilomar, bohu nidbak la'olam, right? That's what he is, therefore a person who runs after good and preserves good, good is preserved for him. People who run after destruction, they meet with destruction. That's the Sefer HaChinuch. There's also another idea here in not destroying things wantonly, and that's the concept of Hakaras HaTov. How do we recognize God in the world? By the good that he does, HaTov HaNetiv. You can't recognize God directly, but you see the goodness that he gives, and God is good. So the more you recognize good, the more you recognize God. But if you don't recognize good, you destroy it, you wantonly mezalzel in it, right, then it takes away opportunities to recognize God. It's another idea. A third idea. It's a disgrace to God to destroy his creations. Everything is God's creations. And therefore, if you're mevazeh, you insult, disgrace, deal in a capricious and demeaning way with God's creations, then you're demeaning God. It's also an idea in why Baal Tashchis is prohibited. The Ramban adds another thing from the source of this, which could apply to other kinds of destruction, but it applies more to the source. What's the source? You have a siege on a city, okay? And you're going to capture the city. Don't destroy the trees around the city, okay? If you can avoid it. You have no specific need for that destruction. Says the Ramban, why? Because that's a sign that you don't really believe that you're ever going to capture the city. You've given up on it, because if you really believe you're going to capture the city, why should you destroy it? Adarabha. You should benefit from what you're going to, your soon is going to be yours. So why would you want to destroy these trees? You know when people destroy trees or destroy a city, scorched earth, when they don't feel that they're going to be able to conquer it, and they gave up, so if I can't have it, then the enemy shouldn't have it either. Okay? Says the Ramban, that's what we mentioned before, therefore, if you don't plan on capturing the city, you don't want to take the city. You just want to get this threat of these people, right, away from you. You just want to get rid of the people. You don't want to capture the city. You don't want the city at all. Then you are allowed to destroy what's in the city in order to make the enemy suffer. The Ramban, we said, argues on that. That's not a good enough reason to destroy things because you want somebody else to suffer. You have to have a need for yourself. But the Ramban says, as long as you want to capture that city, don't give up hope of capturing it and show that you don't really believe you're going to capture it by destroying things in the city. But if you don't want to capture the city and you want the enemy to suffer, according to the Ramban, that is okay. So therefore, in anything that you destroy, right, you really have to have a belief that you're never going to benefit from that thing. But if a person in Emunah and Bitachon, he knows that everything that God made in this world is for some purpose. It's not purposeless. And therefore, why destroy it? Maybe that purpose you'll be able, or somebody else will be able to benefit from. So it's also an idea of lack of emunah, that God created everything for a purpose. And that is why tzaddikim value their money more than their body. One of the ways of understanding it is, a tzaddik understands that every material thing in this world is given and created to serve God somehow, to use somehow in service of God. You can't use it, somebody else will use it. Okay? But it was meant, and therefore, what you have is meant for your service of God. And, therefore, your body was also given to you to serve God. But your body requires less effort than your money to secure. Your body was a birthday present. Money doesn't come so easy. You have to earn it. You have to use your body, and you have to maintain your body. But you also have to use your money and maintain it. So when it comes to your money, you have three efforts. Getting it, maintaining it, using it. When it comes to your body, you only have two efforts. Maintaining it and using it. Getting it was a present. So therefore, what you put more effort is more precious. Both of them are means to serve God. So a tzaddik, his money is more precious than his body, because that's a more precious way of serving God, because it took more effort. That's the way I understand it. And that's why Chazal say in the Mishnah, don't deal capriciously with any human being. Everybody has his time. Everybody was created for a purpose in this world. Don't discount anyone or anything. Everything has its place. Every person has his time. Right? And therefore, to wantonly destroy something means you don't believe that. That God obviously created things for no purpose. And that's not true. Nothing is created for no purpose. Also, it says that when you destroy something, you, especially trees, every tree has a malach. You are blemishing that malach. It causes tremendous spiritual harm also. Another idea that Rabbeinu Yonah says in Shari Tshuva, he says that another reason people destroy things is out of anger. When do people wantonly destroy it? When they're angry, right? You're in a siege, war situation, and it's difficult, and you're afraid, and you vent your frustration on the trees. that, aside from the destruction, is also venting your anger, losing your temper is a terrible thing. And therefore, usually when people wantonly destroy things, it's out of anger. It's out of frustration, and venting your frustrations like that is not a positive thing. Another idea is what's it called? The Maase Oreg says, and this is what I, let me just finish and then I'll take time for questions. The Maase Oreg says the following, I'll quote you what he says, and then we'll connect this to Elul. He says, Hatur v'Shulchan Aruch hishmitu din zeh. You won't find this law that you're not allowed to wantonly destroy things, not in the Tur, not in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention it. So he says, why? Why did they leave this out? The Rambam mentions it. And the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Balatanya, mentions it. And it is a halacha. But it's not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. Why not? He says like this. Ki halacha u'mitzvah shehein ikri hadash. Because the halachas and the mitzvahs that are the foundation of our religion, the yira, the ava, like fearing God and loving God, u'mitzvah yichud, believing that God is one, v'shulallah toracher halev, and not to go after your heart and your eyes, the avas reiv, and loving your neighbor, u'shmiras levavo mi'emunos roos, and protecting yourself from false ideologies, the deos roos, and bad midos, kas, anger and gaiva, haughtiness, with ukima and taking revenge, ustima and hating other people. Lo etiku b'chebereim. You won't find that in the Shulchan Aruch either. Why? Ki kvar nishavru al zeh kama sifrei yiro musar chovas alavavu sukiyotze. Because before the Shulchan Aruch, there were many books written about musar that deal with these subjects. The Shulchan Aruch is dealing with details of mitzvahs, halachas. But not the foundations. The foundations were taken care of by other people way before them because they were necessary for people to learn Musar or whatever. So the Shulchan Aruch didn't bother with that. It takes off after that. That's the foundation. The Shulchan Aruch is dealing with the first, second, third floor of mitzvahs. U'mitzvah zos shelo ye'ish mashkes. That a person shouldn't be a destructive person, the kaisen, and an angry person loses his temper and destroys things. This is the foundation. This is Nidos. They left that for the Musar Sfarim. This is not halacha. This is before halacha. So it comes out that this is more than just a halacha. You can't destroy things. It's part of the foundation of Yiddishkeit. That a person has to be the kind of person that is, like we said, a positive person who recognizes the worth of things in this world. Okay? And that's why specifically by fruit trees, it says that a Talmud Chacham is compared to a fruit tree, right? And that he and his peros is what's it called, is the Torah that he learns, and the words of Torah that he says. And therefore it says, don't worry about eating from that Talmud Chacham, in other words, learning from him, because you think maybe you'll be disturbing him if you go and learn from him. Better he should learn on his own. No. By teaching other people, he will provide more Torah for himself too. So that's what the Ksat Sofer says. And the Malos HaTorah says that a person is like a tree, a fruit tree. His words of Torah are the fruit. Other words are like the leaves that protect the fruit. And Rishayim don't have any fruit. They don't have any words of Torah. And their regular speech doesn't protect the Torah either. It's just stam, a waste of time. So therefore, wasting time from Torah is what's it called, is also considered baltashkes. Time is the greatest asset a person has. If you waste time wantonly, then that's also baltashkes. Okay, and I think the Haredim says, people are more worried about losing their money than losing time. And time is something you can never recover. Money you could recover. Okay, there's a song, I think, based on that. Bittul Torah. Bittul Torah can mean wasting time from learning Torah, or decreasing the value of Torah. Torah is not important to me. That's also about kashrus, right? Of the greatest asset, the most beneficial thing. Okay? And therefore, a person, it says, the Ramah says, someone who fasts, and because of that, because he's fasting, he's not able to learn Torah. He's over on Baltashkes. He's destroying his time. And he's using it for something that's not important, and destroying time from something that is important. Now, Elul is a time to get a perspective on what's important in the world, right? and how important time is, okay, because we're going to be praying for life on Rosh Hashanah. And we're asking for all these things. If we don't recognize what's good, and we wantonly destroy things, why would God give us more things to destroy? And if we're going to ask for time, life is time. And God says, if you're wasting time and destroying it, why should I give you more to destroy and waste? So before on Rosh Hashanah we can come and ask for time and things, we have to appreciate time and things. So this mitzvah Baal Tashchis is very relevant to this time of year. Okay? And therefore also, a person has to see that with his sins, he destroys the world. Says the world was created with 10 ma'amaros to punish the Rishayim who destroy the world that was created with 10 ma'amaros. What does that mean? Every person should consider himself like he's half meritorious and half on the negative side. And the world is half and half. If you do one Aveira, you tip the scales for the whole world to destruction. So every Aveira is a potential destruction of the world. So if you don't want to be a wanton destroyer, you won't do Aveiras. It's also good preparation for Elul. And that's the Pshat, Ani L'Dodi. Dodi means my beloved. During Elul, a person has to get that feeling that God loves him and that he loves God. If I love God, then I love everything that he created. And if he loves me, why should I wantonly destroy myself and my time that he gave me? He gave me all these things out of love. If I deal with them in a capricious, destructive manner, and I wantonly don't make use of them even, surely if I destroy them, right, then how am I relating to God as one who's beloved? Then I'm saying that God doesn't love me, and I don't love him. So in order to really get into Elul, a person has to really feel that God loves him, he's given him all these opportunities, time, things, or whatever, so don't destroy them, use them, right? Don't deal with them in a capricious way, okay? And this is also the hachana for Yom Kippur. We want atonement, right? And we want to receive the Torah, which happened on Yom Kippur. Then we have to show we appreciate it, and we have to show that we don't want to be destroyers in this world. We want to be builders in this world. We want to preserve the world, not destroy it. And therefore, I chose. I don't know if I had that in mind when I chose this mitzvah. But after I finished, it became obvious to me why this was a good mitzvah to pick from the parsha, and also to relate it to Elul and to preparation for Shani and Kippur. Okay, now, any questions? Yes? Destroying? Okay. Again, if you can do something with it and add something to it, right? It's missing sleeves, you can add sleeves. Okay? It's too short, you can lengthen it. Okay? So, better to preserve it if you can. If it's going to cost too much, it'll cost more to do that than to buy something new, then that's something that should be destroyed. Just like if you have a scorpion in your house, okay, that is threatening you, you can step on it. If you have clothing that's a scorpion and worse than that, then you can destroy that too. But again, if you don't have to destroy it, you can correct it, right, fix it, and it'll be beneficial and worthwhile, right, money-wise, then do that. If it's going to cost more, then better to get rid of it, because you're going to waste time and money, and you could easily go to the store and buy a new one. And then this is not, or use it for a shmata. Instead of throwing it away, right, use it for a rag, right? Or put it on a baby, which probably would fit better than the teenager that was meant for. Yeah? How do you spell? Baal Tashchis, Beis Lamed. Baal is the Aramaic for low. It's like low Tashchis. And Tashchis is tough. Shin, Ches, Yud, tough. Yes. Okay. If the effort that you would have to expend, right, is worth more than the clothing is worth in the end, right, because the benefit that other people will get from this clothing is, let's say, worth $10. You're going to have to waste time that's worth more to you than $10. No, but again, if putting all that effort into it, right, is going to waste more of your time, more of your money, right, then you could just go give somebody money and buy clothes, right? If you want to give them a thing, then you could throw it away. But you're not going to go give money to people who buy clothes. And the time is minimal, right? It's not going to cost you a tremendous loss, right, that you could have done something else with that time. It's just a bother. then for a mitzvah, it's good I to bother a little bit. But if it's a big bother, right, and you could be doing other things during that time, or it's going to cause you a loss, not only of money, of other things that you could be doing, it's very hard. So then maybe you should ask somebody who is more objective, right, and give them the circumstances and see what they say, because you're more subjective because you don't want to take any bother. Right, that's natural for a person. Yeah. Again, they used to wear, tattoos is a different prohibition for a Jew. Okay, tattoo is, even if it wouldn't be destructive, it's aser. You know, there's a Torah prohibition of making tattoos. Okay, let's forget about tattoos. Tattoos is a separate thing. But, what? Yes. The iser was, can you bury somebody who spoke Lashon Hara? I hope so. Okay? Even the person who has the tattoo, I once had a balabos in my kehila. He was a Baal Tshuva when he was about 30. He was a sailor when he was young. And he had two big tattoos on his arm, one each arm. Baruch Hashem, even when he wasn't from, he had good taste. They were anchors. Okay. But he said that whenever he went to the mikveh, he said the other guys looked at him like, you know, where did this guy fall through a roof? The sailor right in the mikveh. So he wanted to take off, he was at that time in his late 50s, early 60s, he wanted to go and get an operation, take off the tattoos. And that would have meant full anesthesia, which is a dangerous thing if you don't have to go through it. And I told him, look, the prohibition is putting it on. Having it on, you're not over a prohibition every second you have it on. It was putting it there that was the prohibition. And taking it off would be a sakana. You should be proud. That look where you were and look where you are now. You should take it as a sign of pride. And, okay, that he accepted that. In any case, so having the tattoo, if you did tshuva, you did tshuva. To take it off, it depends. If it's an easy procedure and you're young, maybe you should have it taken off. Or if it really causes you embarrassment and you're just dying of the embarrassment. But if you can live with it and it would be dangerous to take off or put your life in more danger than you have to, then you can leave it. It's not the, that's not the problem. If you did tshuva, right, the tattoo is the issue was doing it, not having it on. Okay, in any case, so tattoo is a different thing. Piercing. There are people who pierce themselves to mutilate themselves. Nothing to do with wearing jewelry, right? They put cigarette burns in themselves. That's a sickness, okay? Self-mutilate. That's is what we're talking about, kashrus. That's worse even than kashrus. That's chovel b'yashmo. That's a separate prohibition. And it's a sickness also. Most people, if they're not sick, don't do this, right? Unless it's stam or shoyim who want to destroy themselves. Now, the piercing, usually what's done is to put rings, whatever, which is also a sickness. But if it becomes a style, and people do it for the style, it's hard to say that that's wanton destruction of your body, because, again, in the time of the Avos, they wore nose rings, right? Rings in their nose. We don't do that today, okay? But people wear earrings. So to say that it could be also for other reasons. It's chukas hagoyim. Right, it's the reason that you do it. What it implies is prohibited, but that it's destructive, that not, because it's you're doing it because you want to, you know, beautify yourself. Yeah. What? Yeah. What's the sheer? Right. You think it's pretty to have five earrings, right? To me, I don't have any earrings, right? Okay. So one would be more than enough. Okay. It wouldn't. Right. But for somebody who said, but a woman has one earring, right, so if somebody has five earrings, they think their ears look nicer with five earrings. Again, there are other reasons why it's also. Because, mostly because of what it represents and chukas hagoyim. But that it's destructive, mutilation, it's not. It's not. I just want to make it clear. I usually have a class after this. But my other classes don't start for another week or two. So I want to prove to you, the only reason I run out of here is I have to. When I don't have to, so I'm here, okay? Within limit, okay, go ahead, yeah. Okay, there is no mitzvah to be poor. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was a rich man. He compiled the Mishnah. Yaakov Avinu was a very rich man, okay? All the Avos were rich. They weren't poor, okay? Of our greatest tzaddikim, many of them were very rich. Okay, that's what a tzaddik says. My wealth is not there to make me happy. It's a responsibility. God gave me a tremendous amount of material things. He expects me to use them in a proper way. It's a responsibility. But it's a tremendous, precious thing, because that I have the opportunity to serve God through many, many material things. That's why it says, this Reb Tzadok from Lublin explains the following. It says, Reb Yehuda Nossi, who was a rich man, he didn't have on his table, there was always vegetables out of season, the Gemara says. They could import things, whatever, they didn't want for anything. Yet before Reb Yehuda Nossi died, he lifted his 10 fingers to heaven, and he said, God, you are my witness, I didn't enjoy anything in this world with any of my 10 fingers. So Tosfos asks, he had all these vegetables out of season, how could he say? So Tosfos says he had it on his table, other people ate it, he didn't. Reb Tzadok says, no, he ate it. But he didn't do it as personal pleasure. He did it as service to God. If God gave me these things, then I want to eat them and appreciate the Rabbanu Shalom by eating them, make a brach on them, whatever. And he did it l'shem shamayim. He didn't do it for personal pleasure. So if you look at riches as something to enjoy personally, physically, then it's something that's negative. And if having those things will lead you away from Torah because you follow these physical, then it's negative. But if having those things will make it easier for it to learn Torah, it'll make you easier to do mitzvahs or whatever, than having them as a positive thing. Again, if you're striving to be rich at the expense of spiritual things, and it's going to make you not be involved because you're putting so much effort into being rich, no, that's wrong. Because you're doing it, obviously, not for spiritual reasons, because you're sacrificing spiritual reasons to get there. But if you want to be rich and you really feel that it's going to help you, right, to serve the Rabbanu Shalom. I can't put up with the Nisayan of poorness. So I need to be comfortable in order to serve God properly, because if I'm not comfortable, then I know that I'm going to fail that test. There's a test in being poor, there's a test in being rich. But I know I can deal better with the test of being rich. Sometimes you don't know if that's honest or not. Sometimes you think that if you'd be rich, you'd be able to serve the Rabbanu Shalom better, and the truth is the Rabbanu Shalom knows you being poor is better. Right? It depends on the person. I remember, you can fool yourself. I remember when I bought a house in Miami, there, the rule is people have swimming pools. That's not unusual. I think in California, the same thing. Right? That's an unusual house. This house doesn't have a swimming pool. It's unusual. So I convinced myself that buying a house with a swimming pool would be very conducive to serving the Rabbanu Shalom. First of all, it's very comfortable, right? And there's not too many places you can go not mix swimming. And I would be able to invite people over, men, women, that would have separate, you know, swimming, and avoid them from having mixed swimming or whatever, and give them an outlet. And I had all these great reasons, and it was very nice to have a pool. And it really was something that was not only enjoyable, but comfortable. But when I moved to Eretz Yisrael, here we didn't have a swimming pool. We still don't. The only swimming pool we have is in the winter when it leaks into our living room, then we have a swimming pool. But otherwise, we never had a swimming pool here, and I quickly discovered that you could be a servant of the Rabbanu Shalom without a swimming pool, which was a big chiddush to me, but it showed me that maybe I had fooled myself a little bit before. Okay, so you have to know to be a little objective, but it is true that wanting to be comfortable for certain people is a positive thing, and those kind of people just can't deal with poverty. Some people can deal very nice with poverty, and if they had more, they couldn't deal with it. Okay. Yeah. Okay, leftovers that could be eaten should be eaten. Shouldn't be just wantonly thrown away. But if somebody left something on their plate, okay, and anybody who knows that was on somebody else's plate is not going to eat it. Okay, so what are you going to do? Put it back in the kitchen and not tell anybody it was on somebody else's plate. Okay, that, if you know the person would not eat that, right? And also it could be that, you know, it's not healthy, it's not hygienic or whatever, and therefore you can't do anything with it. Then if there's pets around, you can feed it too, fine. But if going and looking for pets is going to waste more time and money than the food is worth, then you can throw that away too. Give it to Yeshiva. I guarantee you it'll be eaten. Okay, find some teenage boys, right, and it will be faster to consume than the garbage can consume it. Is it a chiyuv? No, because again, looking around and wasting the time of finding the people to eat it, you don't have them readily available. I have a yeshiva. So all the leftovers from Shabbos are gone in minutes. All I have to do is open the door and say, okay, guys, take what you want. Okay? Even things that aren't leftovers get taken. But you don't have a yeshiva available, and you have to go start looking around, right? And you walk into a Beis Midrash, right? Who are you? And they don't know if you're kosher, not kosher, whatever. So you're going to have to go through a tremendous expense of time and effort. The time and effort is not worth the food. So you have to make that cheshbon. Yeah. Yeah. That's much better, yes. Then take it on the person, yes. Not only that, it says that if you want to exert fear on your family, right? You know, it's a little bit. You want to, you know, make them see they're doing something wrong. You ought to break something in front of them to pretend that you're angry. Not that you lost your temper, but you're going through the motions as if they see that you're angry, so they'll learn that this is something very serious. If you should, you shouldn't break things out of losing your temper, but you can break them by using your temper. One of those, what are they called? Needle, what's it called? Not darning flies, what are they called? They're called dragonflies, thank you. They look really, really scary, but they can't hurt a fly. Right? Can't hurt anybody. They don't bite, they don't do anything, they've never hurt you. If you are really afraid of these things and disgusted by them, and because of that you're going to get sick, or what's it called, then yeah, better destroy the insect than yourself. But if you should realize that there are certain things that don't mean anything. Again, it depends where it is, right? If it's in a place that's really bothering you, then, right, it's bothering you. But if it's in a place where it's not bothering you at all, you could just go somewhere else and leave it alone, then why destroy it? Yeah. I have two more and then we'll go. Yeah. 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 You shouldn't overbuy when you know for sure that you're going to be destroying some of it and you're not going to eat it, it's just going to be destroyed. But if you're buying because you think that you may need it, right, and you would rather take the chance than have less, yeah, then you're lost. Yeah, it's okay. Okay. Yeah. 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 That's not baltash. Eating something is not baltashkas. Yes. Spider? Yeah. A spider, I don't know where this came from, that spiders, you get seven mitzvahs and one aveira or something like that. A spider also. If it's a black widow, right, you should kill it. If it's a little spider that's not bothering anybody, but you don't like spider webs in your house, right? And just to take away the web and leave the spider, you'll have spider webs again. And you don't like to clean them up, then you kill the spider too. But if the spider's outside on a tree making its web, then why kill it, right? Leave it alone. That's the spider's tree, right? Spider maybe should kill you if you come into his tree. He doesn't like you, right? But why destroy the spider? Okay, but in your house, you can kill ants, spiders, or whatever, if they mosquitoes, for sure, mosquitoes bother you. That's malkashkus of yourself. Better to be malkashkus than mosquito than yourself. Okay. What? This class will be on that website. Yes. The website is www.rabbileft.net.